CBSI in the world. I'm John Batchelor. From the surface of the planet Earth, we're going to the surface of the planet Earth, Washington, D.C., where the FCC weighs in on the future of space exploration and opportunity. Bob Zimmerman, he keeps the website Behind the Blacks. Bob, it wouldn't be logical for me to assume that the FCC is connected to rocketry, and yet it is, and the prosperity of rocketry. How so?
For no reason under the sun. It's totally illegal, but this is what the administrative state, the swamp in Washington, is doing. It's grabbed because Congress has been very weak for half a century and constantly ceding its power to the bureaucracy. The bureaucracy now is going on the offensive repeatedly. And I'll show that we have several stories to illustrate this. The FCC late last year started to announce that it was going to set up new regulations having to do with how satellites would be built, which has nothing to do with its statutory authority. Its statutory authority has to do with assigning wavelength frequencies to various users, like radio stations and television stations and so forth, and ham radio people, for example. That's what its job is supposed to be. It's not supposed to be regulating how satellites are built, but that's what it claimed it wanted to do. Congress is more or less now rubber-stamping that with a bill. It hasn't been passed yet, but they immediately agreed to go along with the FCC. And as a result, the FCC this week announced it's creating a space bureau. It's carving it out of its international bureau, which was designed once again to help coordinate the assignment of frequencies between different satellites and different users of the wavelength, electromagnetic wavelength, with other countries. That was the coordination bureau. But now they're going to carve out a space bureau, and this is essentially going to be there to enforce the new regulations that the FCC has created out of fantasy land that it has the right to do. The bureaucracy in D.C. essentially now writes the laws, and Congress meekly bows to approve them. None of this has anything to do with whether or not their proposals make sense. This is a separate issue. And there are questions whether they do make sense. But they shouldn't be the ones making this decision. And they have now made that decision, and they're going to be in power. We'll see if anyone sues them over this. I suspect not, because the private enterprise is frightened of them. And we have the second story, John, which relates to this. SpaceX this week announced that it's going to publicly do a webcast of Starship's first orbital flight. This will be a flight which will take off on Super Heavy from Boca Chica. The spacecraft will pretty much make orbit, but then it'll come down before it completes that orbit northeast of Hawaii in the ocean. And this is just the orbital test of Starship for the first time, and it'll be the first launch of Super Heavy for the first time. Now, SpaceX has been ready to do this now for about a month, and they've been waiting for the FAA launch license, and it hasn't been forthcoming. Well, they say they have said that they're going to do this the late in the week of April 17th, which would be April 21st, and that's when you'd expect this live broadcast. Well, they still haven't gotten the FCC license. We're now at the end of this week.
FAA license.
Yes, I'm sorry, FAA license, and we're still in the. We're at the end of this week, and next week, the launch week is next week. SpaceX has gotten the approvals to do some kind of test with Super Heavy Starship this coming Monday on the 17th. Now, a lot of people are saying, the launch, but I don't think so. I think it's going to be a static fire test because the license hasn't yet been approved. And there are now rumors that the Fish and Wildlife Department in the Department of Interior is holding back the approval because who knows? What do they have to do with space activities and launches? Well, remember, there was an environmental reassessment of this site last year. It took a long time, was delayed a long time by this swamp of administrative state. When they finally approved it, they put great limits on what SpaceX could do. And those limits involved a lot of environmental stuff. And I think those limits included the right for the Fish and Wildlife to approve any launch. And so they haven't approved it. It's been sitting there. So I suspect what SpaceX is hoping will happen this week is they'll get their static fire dress rehearsal launch countdown completed on Monday, the 17th, with the hope they'll be able to launch by the end of the week. But once again, this administrative state is now in charge. We are not a free country, and they will decide whether or not they want SpaceX to launch. And Fish and Wildlife, apparently, in the federal government, is acting as a corrupt power broker here and does not want to give that license away.
Yet. We're headed to a landing on the moon. Who is Bob?
Well, this is interesting. This is a company called iSpace in Japan. They are the first ones to build a private commercial lunar lander and the first to fly one. There are others that are trying to do so, but they are the first to fly, and they're in Japan. I wonder why. Maybe because bureaucracy here in the United States is slowing things down. But they now have the Akuto 1 lunar lander in lunar orbit, and they announced this week that they are going to attempt their landing on April 25th in Atlas Crater, which when you look at the moon, is in its northeast quadrant. That landing, that this lander carries a bunch of commercial payloads, including one that NASA put on there, and including one that the United Arab Emirates put on there. It's Rashid Rover, intended to last for about one lunar day. One lunar day, about 14 hours. 14 days. Now, this whole mission is an engineering mission. They have 10 basic goals to prove out their systems. There is science going on here, and like the Rashid Rover is going to try to do things, but it's essentially an engineering mission to see if they can accomplish a lunar mission. And so far, they've completed 8. The last 2 is the landing and then science operations on the surface. And we'll just have to wait and see, John.
What is relativity?
Relativity is the rocket company that was developing 3D printed rockets. It attempted to launch its Terran 1 smaller version rocket about a month and a half ago, and they successfully got the first stage completed its actions, but the second stage engine never fired, so they didn't get into orbit. But their main goal was to test to see if the 3D printing that they used was going to work. And it apparently did. So they have now made a decision. They're not going to do any more Terran 1 launches. They're going to move directly to developing the more powerful Terran R rocket, which is very comparable, by the way, will be very comparable to the SpaceX Falcon 9. Its first stage will be reusable and will land on a barge vertically, and they hope to fly it by 26. This means a 2-year delay before they become an operational company. What's interesting is they've also made the decision with their Terran R rocket to not completely 3D print it. They're going to do sections of it by aluminum manufacturer, standard old-fashioned way, which once again points to the wisdom of SpaceX choosing stainless steel hulls for its rocket rather than 3D printing. It's faster and simpler.
What is the thinking behind 3D printing? Something you can take off planet? Is that why they're emphasizing it?
There's a lot of advantages to 3D printing. I'm not denying that when I talk about this. It's just that when you get a cool technology, there's a habit of engineers to try to apply it everywhere when it doesn't make sense. And it's the job of the capitalists running the company to distinguish when it makes sense and when it doesn't. But one of the reasons Relativity has been able to raise a lot, more than $1 billion worth of investment capital, is because of that 3D printing capability, not in terms of rockets, but they will have, they could do many spin-off products using their 3D printers for other purposes, and that is a valuable asset that they have that they're going to make a lot of money in the future years, nothing to do with rockets. You're right, off space, manufacturing in space, if you've got a 3D printer, you have the ability to print a lot of things without complicated manufacturing facilities. And so there's no doubt about it. The 3D printing is going to be something that's going to be used in space extensively. Think of the replicators on Star Trek. That's essentially what this is. And so, yes, it's a good idea, but in this case, Relativity has decided, yeah, there are some places in a rocket where it's better to just simply use an aluminum hull, and they're going to go that way. It means, though, they're not an operational company for at least 3 more years, so we have to wait for them, and that means other companies can move in and take over in the meantime.
We go to the University of Stuttgart, the future. Students, what's their mission, Bob?
The students here, students in universities who want to be in the space industry generally do one of two things. They either build CubeSats and test them on a flight to show that they learn how to build a satellite, or they build model rockets, sometimes big model rockets, and sometimes rockets, model rockets big enough to get into suborbital space. And that's what the students in Stuttgart are doing. They're building a hybrid rocket that they hope in any day now to put on a suborbital launch that will get into space, and it actually set a new record for the highest suborbital student-built rocket ever flown. What struck me about this story is that they are not unique in being students doing this. What's interesting is it's in Germany. And Germany right now has three different startup rocket companies trying to become the first to put an orbital rocket in space from Germany. These students are really smart. They're training themselves in a field where there's going to be a gigantic demand for engineers because Germany has three different companies trying to become rocket startups. And so I think this is indicating that Germany has a really strong future as a rocket producer and launcher, John.
And Bob, about students getting involved in space engineering going forward, we're of the 20th century. Is this a fresh fashion in universities? Do you see a lot of information flowing about universities starting programs that speak to this, to prosperity in space?
This is, it's not a new thing. This has been going on since the late 60s, you know, beginning of the space era, accelerated into the 70s. What you're seeing, though, is a recognition by a lot more universities, I think real worldwide, to install such programs. And so, yes, there is a growth, and it comes from both directions. The universities are recognizing there's a growth industry here, and the students are demanding these kind of classes. They're going to universities to have them, which means other universities have to install them. And so, yes, there is a growth here, no doubt about it.
Juice mission. Cool, Bob. Is this Ariana Space, European Space Agency? What's the mission?
Juice is a mission to the moons of Jupiter, the big Galilean moons of Jupiter, the ones that are planets. And it was launched today by Ariana Space on its Ariane 5 rocket. It's going to take 8 years to get to Jupiter. During that time, it's going to do a flyby of the Earth-Moon and another flyby of the Earth, and then a flyby of Venus. And in those 8 years, it'll also fly by an asteroid, they think. They're still not certain about that. And once it gets to Jupiter in 31, it's going to spend 3 years doing 35 flybys of Ganymede, Callisto, and Europa. And then at the end of 34, it will go into orbit around Ganymede for most of 35, and then it'll crash into the planet to end the mission. And so, yes, this is a very cool mission. It's going to see the results of this in the next decade. It'll be quite exciting to get really good images from these moons, because we never really have gotten a lot of good stuff from them. The Galilean mission from the 90s, unfortunately, had a antenna problem, so it could never send back a lot of images, and so we only got a fleeting glimpse of the mysteries of these moons, and this is going to give us a good look. The Ariane 5 itself is an interesting story that launched it, because this is the next to last launch of the Ariane 5. Ariane 5 is being retired and going to be replaced by the Ariane 6, which hasn't flown yet. So when Ariane 5 flies in June, the European Space Agency and Ariane Space will not have a big rocket. They hope to fly the Ariane 6 before the end of this year, but I wouldn't bet any money on that, John.
Bob Zimmerman, he keeps the website Beyond the Black. We're going on a meteorite hunt. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.